Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Mac Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and welcome to an adventure in history. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here tonight with Mac Burns, Executive Director of Clatsop County Historical Society, along with a very special guest.
See, I thought we tried to not use the word special anymore.
Along with a guest.
An awesome guest.
Oh, awesome. Oh.
And he's a two-timer now.
Ooh, almost getting the t-shirt.
He's been here twice. This will be his second show. Okay. So it's Steve Wright. You are city councilor for Seaside.
Yep.
Extraordinaire.
And still the president.
See, there's the adjective.
Well, there we go. Extraordinaire. And the president of the Seaside.
President of the board of the Seaside Historical Society.
Okay. See, I always, with us and with Cannon Beach and you guys, I'm always, I can't remember if it's historical, museum and history society. I mean, they're all kinds of mixed.
We're not too particular. We're trying to rebrand ourselves. And call us a history center like many other places are. So we have some brand new signs that actually say Seaside Museum History Center.
See, I like that. I like that a lot. We were trying to figure out how to name the Heritage Museum years ago, and then Iwako beat us to it. My director of marketing, and he was right, I have to admit, and I will freely admit it to everyone, that he said we should call ourselves like the Columbia Pacific Heritage Center.
Oh.
And then, as I was contemplating this, they announced that that's their new name. Oh. And I'm like, yeah, that was a pretty good idea, Sam. I'm sorry I didn't take you up on it.
So you dropped it. Heritage Museum.
That's why we're just still the Heritage Center, Heritage Museum, and we don't really know. But mm-hmm. I like History Center.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good move. Okay, because we got tons to talk about. Let's whip through the... Do you have anything to plug?
You know, things are happening again. And one thing that I did want to plug is in Seaside. The Seaside Farmers Market has been back now for a couple weeks.
Wow.
And it is every Wednesday from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the old Seaside Middle School parking lot. So right there across from the library. Great venue, great vendors there with fresh produce, fresh fruit. So kind of
someday
nice.
There will be a farmer's market every day of the week in our region. You could get fresh stuff every day.
That's true. That would be nice. But yeah, happy.
Or you could go to the store.
We're definitely happy that the farmer's market's
back. That's nice. Yeah. All right. Let's see. My family's been to the Storia Sunday market, but I've not been there yet.
I haven't been yet to that one either. That one opened Mother's Day.
Yeah. We usually try and get there at least the first or second week.
I've heard
the rest of the family did. I did not.
There you go.
So, all right. I don't know why I just confessed to that. It's really kind of a needless confession, but all right. And these are things that happen tomorrow so that you can go to work or if you happen to be a contestant on Jeopardy that's airing live or something, or you're going to trivia night, you can bring these up as icebreakers. Okay. On this day in June 21st, 1768.
Ooh.
The first medical diploma in America is granted to Dr. John Archer from the College of Philadelphia.
Okay.
1768. I can't decide if I think that's early or late.
Oof, I don't know.
No doctors before that? They're all barbers or something?
There were doctors.
All right. Not licensed?
Yes.
1879. Frank W. Woolworth opens his first successful F.W. Woolworth Great 5 Cent Store on North Queen Street, Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Ooh.
I went to college in Lancaster County.
There you go.
Why did I not know about this? I went to the museums there.
You weren't around back then?
Well, no. I missed the grand opening, 1879. See, that would have been a great segue because we could talk about reopenings.
Yes.
Because we're going to talk about the Seaside Museums reopening.
Okay. We're getting there.
But I have other things first. So that was terrible timing. Okay. 1893, the first Ferris wheel opens at the Columbian Exposition in Chicago, Illinois, 1893.
How fun.
And there's a great book if you like historical engineering and data and how things like the Ferris wheel are created and the Columbian Exposition, but it's also married to serial killers because there's a famous serial killer in the town. But it's a really great book, Devil in the White City.
Okay.
It's a really good book. It talks about both things.
Interesting.
So anyway. Maybe you can like read it and just skip chapters. In 1939, New York Yankees announce Lou Gehrig's retirement after doctors reveal he has Lou Gehrig's disease. Today, I consider. You don't know that speech. Mm-hmm. You know the speech. All right, but our history highlight of the day, thing I think had the most impact in history, and this was a no-brainer for me, 1788, the U.S. Constitution is ratified.
Oh, that is a good one.
You know, and if you ever really read the Constitution, it's kind of an amazing document that they realized that things were going to change in the world, but they still kind of gave the guardrails or an overall framework that is just kind of an amazing document. And, you know, there's that saying that we have the worst form of government except for all the other kinds out there. And I firmly believe that, you know, as much as we may complain about things, it's still a pretty amazing document that these guys sat down and wrote and that the country ratified.
Yeah.
So there's my soapbox for the day.
There you go.
That's 1788, yeah. U.S. Constitution. Did I miss anything?
No, not today.
Wow.
I know. It's a first.
You're slipping.
Yeah.
So, Steve, why don't you quickly just give us the elevator speech of who you are. I know we discussed it last time, but in case somebody's listening that doesn't remember.
Well, I came here from the Portland area where my career was in grain export. I was the CFO of an international grain exporter that shipped out of Portland, Oregon. And I thoroughly enjoyed the job. And the opportunity came up in about the end of 2013. I was able to retire a little early. And we had bought a house in Seaside, a vacation home. I know people have bad feelings about people buying vacation homes, but we did it. And we decided we loved it so much. I think I'm a small-town guy at heart. And so we ended up moving here full-time, selling our house in Gresham. And I immediately jumped into the museum because history's always been something, as well as the trolley.
Oh,
I always wanted to have something to do with trains, and that's probably the closest I ever get, but the Astoria Trolley, a riverfront trolley, is a great organization. It's a lot of fun.
So in your volunteering there, are you a driver or a speaker or both, and which do you prefer?
Actually, you have to be, pretty much have to be both, a conductor and a motorman. And I thought for sure I was only going to enjoy being a motorman because I never really liked to talk a lot. Just ask my wife. I don't use up my allotment of words every day. And it turned out that it's actually a lot of fun to talk about Astoria and every once in a while toss in something about Seaside. Not supposed to, but do anyway.
I'm okay at breaking that rule.
But it's a lot of fun. You meet a lot of great folks, people that want to stand up front with you or stand in the back and just talk. And it's just tremendous. It's such a great thing for Astoria to have.
And one of the cheapest, cool things ever.
Oh, yeah.
Still charge $1 for a ride. You can stay on all day if you want to. $2 to get on and off privileges. You can't beat that anywhere in the world.
Nope. That's amazing. So how long have you been doing that?
It must be about six years now, okay. I think. Yeah.
All right. So we do have to get the political stuff out of the way. So what on earth ever made you want to be a city councilor?
It just kind of worked into that. I started out, the former mayor was actually a good friend back from the Portland area, and he encouraged me to get involved in city government, so I first joined the Planning Commission, and then he unfortunately passed away, and it opened up a spot on the council, and I went ahead and applied for it and was chosen, and then I've run for one election since then. Nobody ran against me, so...
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, that was a really easy way to do it. We'll see what happens in a couple of years when I run, open up again.
See, though, I'm okay when somebody doesn't have an opponent. If they're the right person, if you were doing a terrible job, somebody would have run against you.
Well, so, I hope that's
that
the
isn't
case,
always how it works. Yeah.
I choose to believe that, though, that means that it's a vote of confidence that nobody wanted to run against you.
Oh, it's true.
Or yes. Nobody else is dumb enough to take that responsibility.
Now, see, I agree with that, too.
Yes. Oh,
it can be a lot of work, and you do get people that just think you're doing a terrible job anyway. No matter what you do, so right. Well, and those you have to live with that.
Those are the people you're going to hear from. It's the other people that just think you're doing a great job and never comment.
They don't tell you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, But it's a lot of fun, and it's nice to feel like I'm at least doing a little bit of something for Seaside.
I think it's a nice perspective, too, because, like you said, you came from Portland, you had a vacation home, and then you moved here. So you've had different perspectives, mm-hmm. too, which is nice that you're bringing something to the board, because those are multiple layers. Yeah. And then being a full-time resident now, I mean, you're invested.
Right.
So
it's nice. A lot different. In when I was in my career, I was doing financial stuff and planning and dealing with a lot of governmental agencies. So getting into government myself was not something I thought I'd ever do, because I usually didn't have all that great of experience.
So without naming the company, unless you want to, where were things being shipped to that you were, I mean, I assume you were dealing with other countries or other government bureaucracies?
The company's name is Columbia Grain International, and headquartered in Portland, and basically grew up with the company. It started out very small and grew to be one of the major companies here in the Northwest. And a good deal of the exports went to Japan. It was wheat and corn, and later on soybeans. Mm-hmm. And so everything on the Pacific Rim, Philippines, China, Japan. And it was a great bunch of us that worked together, because we were all fairly young, mm-hmm. and kind of grew up through the company. So it was a good time. I really enjoyed it.
Neat. Nice. So actually, I asked you to be our guest today to talk about the Seaside Museum, mm-hmm. Because you obviously got hit by COVID and had to be closed. But we also want to talk about some other project that you're kind of wearing two hats on. But let's talk about the museum first.
Okay.
So how bad was COVID for you guys?
Well, basically, I like to tell or say that all of our volunteers are pretty much older than I am. And I think that's true in a lot of cases. Because I retired early, I got a little bit of a head start on people. But, we all didn't want to affect them. So we shut down as soon as everybody else did. Mm-hmm. And we did not reopen until last Friday. And we're basically just reopening with mostly just board members that feel like it's okay to go ahead. Very few of our regular volunteers from a year and 3 months ago are... Mm-hmm. getting involved yet. So we just said, that's what we've got to do. We have no choice. And again, from the city standpoint, all of this is new to us. We did not know any of this was going to happen. We had no plans for it happening. And we're playing it by ear. No matter what you say about the governor, she's in the same boat.
Yeah.
So we figured that, okay, we'll just stay shut down, and things went pretty stale for a while. We were able to get some small grants, and then we did the one large grant through the Cultural Trust, I think you did too, and that was able to help us pay for the utilities and things that kept going, as well as keeping our one part-time staff at least partially employed, as she had her own issues in that, you got kids at home, you got to deal with them. So we managed to get through all of that. So it didn't make us go in the hole in any sense. And there was never really any danger of that. But along about last fall, we just kind of took the bull by the horns and said, we really need to be using this time to figure out, okay, it's an ideal time to start changing some things. We hired a consultant about 3 years ago and spent some grant money on figuring out what we wanted to be when we grew up. And so we started putting some of those things into place. And I think the thing that really helped us get going was I said, okay, let's just do it. Tear out a bunch of this stuff we've been talking about doing for a long time. We took it down to the studs and the insulation. The wallboard was in terrible shape once we tore down the displays over there. And redid it all, put new wallboard back up, painted it all, and just had this big wide open space. Now, in our museum, a big wide open space is maybe 10 by 20 feet, if that. So, we're a small museum. But we did that, and then we started being able to see and dream a little better. If you see it right in front of you, you have a better idea what you can do with that. Mm-hmm. Along about, must have been March or so, I started thinking, and part of the plan of this was to be able to bring things into the museum and not be the same as we were 20 years ago, which is pretty much, well, yeah, Mac shaking his head because, or nodding his head, because we actually used you, if you remember. You came down and gave us some ideas of things we could change to bring us a little more up to date. And one of those was
they actually listened to
me. Writing. Yes.
It took them a while.
We had a lot of little placards that had, you know, 5 or 6 paragraphs of writing. Mm. And, you know, some people stand there and read every word. Other people read the first sentence and then move on. Because, oh, I don't care about that, or that's too much writing.
You get some study was done years ago, like 2 seconds to get their attention.
Yeah.
And that's you know, before anybody thinks that you're knocking your own museum, every museum in the world has that problem.
Yeah.
I mean, we have all this information, and we want, you know, we fight that diarrhea of the text label that we just want to throw everything out there. And you can't. And mm-hmm. we still struggle with that in our museums here, that we sometimes have way too much text. And I'm as guilty as anybody else.
But anyway, we did. We took that to heart. One of the things I read maybe a year ago, and I mentioned this when we reopened, is that I felt we were in an arrested state of decay. And, you know, the things that were there were in good shape still. They were pertinent. It's just that, you know, you can move beyond that and bring new things in. And that was part of the thing. You know, if you were a resident of Seaside and you'd been there once in the past 20 years, there was absolutely no reason to come back unless you wanted to buy something in the gift shop. So what we want to do with this space we opened up was be able to, on an ongoing basis, change out stuff and be able to show new things and highlight the history of Seaside, whether it's a business or people or a organization. You know, and it's happening actually this week. The Miss Oregon pageant is happening. We'd love to be able to have a little display there that just talks about what Miss Oregon is all about and how long it's been in Seaside, you know, since the 40s, I think it was.
Wow. And that's one of the challenges that we all face as well, is that, you know, the people visit once, they think they've seen it, and then they only come back when they have relatives in town or somebody they're trying to entertain, and what do we do on the third day? And that's the challenge that we have as museums, is to engage that audience instead of coming once every 5 years, to make them come 5 times a year and give them a reason. And if it's, even if it's just a small space or a case, you know, for us on the steps that we change out periodically for the anniversary of something like a beauty pageant or or a Scandinavian festival or something else that allows us to just give that little, hey, don't forget we're here and we have a little something different for you if you come this time.
Yeah, what a great idea. And to get that group too, those folks, those new folks coming, like you said, for Miss Oregon. And then one more activity for them to do just down the street.
Because I want to give a couple of chances. You also lost some of your fundraising events last year.
Right.
We did. We lost, this last year and this year, the 4th of July, old-fashioned social has been going on 30-plus years. And last year, we had to cancel that. And we have this year as well. And so that was a, you know, we're, like I said, we're a very small museum and not a very big budget, but that would bring in $5,000 or $6,000 net to us every year. And it was a big part of the budget. Last year, we were able to have one of our board members has a very creative sister who can do interesting things with quilting. And she did this paneled quilt that we were able to raffle and raise some money from this year. Go to our website and you can see a 3-panel quilted thing that highlights many years of the prom, 100 years of the prom. The prom is our anniversary of 100 years is this year. And so there's a big fundraiser there. We also have some little lapel pins commemorating the prom's 100th birthday.
And what is your website?
SeasideOregonMuseum.com. Very easy to remember. A lot to type, but once you do it, then it'll remember and you can go from there.
And whether it's buying raffle tickets or whether it's just making a donation, they can do that through the website?
They can do all that.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, it is a fine organization, and I think that the people connected to it are very dedicated, hardworking, and I've gone through a couple of times, and I know the volunteers didn't know who I was, and I didn't announce, and they were wonderful. They were obviously great. Proud of the museum and proud of the town. So it is a worthwhile organization, and if you've got an extra $50 or $100, I think it's well worth sending to you guys to
absolutely
make sure
we'll,
you continue.
We'll be very happy.
What are your hours of operation?
Well, right now we're just planning on being open Friday and Saturdays from 10 to 3.
Perfect.
Yeah. We have try to maintain a pretty good presence on Facebook. We have the website as well. And you can go there and check up on us and see what's happening.
And then how often do you expect to change out that content, like you're planning?
Well, that's another new thing for us. We've never really done that before because obviously we were kind of in the 20-year mode.
Right.
And we have a bunch of people that have kind of said we want to be involved in that. So what we're looking at, actually right now, the exhibit that I went and found was a traveling exhibit from Oregon Historic Society. It's called Oregon Voices. It's a smaller, portable exhibit from what they already have in their museum. And it's it really fills up that 10 by 20 foot space. So you have to kind of wander in and around to get all three sides of these little pop-up kiosks that they have. But it's very interesting stuff, and it's stuff that we kind of all remember from the history of Oregon, mainly from World War II forward, the kind of things that Oregon has become. But that goes away at the end of August, and so right now we'll also, or very soon anyway, have an exhibit of prom photos through the years at our library.
Oh, I love and that.
And then very likely we'll be bringing some of those photos back to the museum and showing them there in this same space. And then ongoing, we'll start looking for other things. We want to do some, we've got some ideas. One of them, Ben Holiday was a really big thing in Seaside. You know, we have Holiday Street that was named after him. He was really the first one to, he built the Seaside House, which was really the first big hotel resort in Seaside, early 1870s. And we want to do a good exhibit on him. We had one before, but it didn't really tell much of the story other than a whole bunch of text. So we want to work on that. Like I said, the Miss Oregon thing is another great idea. We'd really like to highlight some of the businesses we have in town. Phillips Candy, for instance, has been there in one form or another for most of the history of Seaside. The Playland. Another one that we're really interested in doing is figuring out kind of the history of music in Seaside. We had some really great groups come through Seaside. We had the Pipo Club. We had the Bungalow Dance Hall. It was the place to come, Seaside was, in those days, to get the most up-to-date music, you know, in the 20s and 30s and 40s. So we want to do something about that.
How exciting.
There's never ending. There's always something.
There's always
a story to tell.
And what can we expect for this 100-year anniversary of the prom? Do you have any capstone events?
Yeah, we do. That's another thing that I'm working on. I, whatever reason, volunteered to be the one that's in charge of scheduling everything for the date of August 7th.
Oh, good.
We have a committee of various interested people through the just got together. A lot of this really started, and I got to give a lot of credit to Joshua Heineman, who is our tourism director for the city. He really got it going. He went out and got some money, grant money, and created a commemorative booklet that is being offered right now at the Visitor Center. You can go and get one. Actually, we have some at the museum now, too. And it has a lot of this history that we're talking about in that booklet. And it's run... there's a contest that's a quarterly contest that if you go and stay at a motel or a short-term rental or something like that, you go into the visitor center and you can get a holographic sticker, which I just happen to have on the back of my phone. All you folks in radio, take a look
Very
at this.
Very pretty.
Yes. It's kind of wearing down now, but you can get one of those once a quarter and get entered in a contest. And that was really the kickoff to everything that we're doing. He's kind of led us in this process. Anyway, we got together pre-COVID. So unfortunately, a lot of things have had to go by the side. My history and hops program was going to kick it off last fall, And obviously that didn't happen. But to have a theme of what we did with the prom over the years.
So what was the origins of the prom? I mean, 100 years ago, what prompted them to make this and what was the idea behind it?
There was a mayor at the time. His name was Earl Norton Hurd. And actually, you should recognize that because your own David Reed, who's the Chamber of Commerce director here in Astoria, played him at one of your talking tombstones, the only one that we've held at Evergreen Cemetery in Seaside.
Love it.
And, you know, he did a great job. In fact, he's going to make another appearance on August 7th.
Nice.
We will have Ian Hurd, who was really the guy that pushed the prom. It did not meet with a lot of acclamation. In fact, a lot of people then called it Hurd's Folly. I think it was a lot of people that lived in Seaside, just like today, that don't like tourists come visiting their town. And so he did that. There was, you know, a lot of things went into this, but basically he convinced the city council to put out a bid and do a bond and all that. And they started building it somewhere around November of 1920. And worked on it through the winter, which, you know anything about the winters, and that the beach in Seaside did not exist like it does today, we have a lot of pictures of the waves crashing over the seawall. Hmm. In fact, the first thing I noticed when I went and looked at the signal for August 7th of 1921, it said seawall and promenade dedicated. Because the focus of it actually was to have a seawall there to help the businesses and the residences that lived along there not to be flooded all the time.
And see, I've read some articles about water flooding, you know, two blocks, three blocks in.
Right. It would go up over the seawall. I mean, you see the pictures.
That's amazing.
Keep in mind that, you know, this is 1920. The jetties were built, you know, early 1900s, late 1800s. There wasn't much, there were a lot of rocks, and there was a little bit of beach at that time. And you compare it to what it is now, you know, I talked about people being able to stand around the turnaround when we have the August 7th dedication, and, you know, there is lots of beach there. We can have a lot of people standing down there.
Yeah.
In 1921, you couldn't. There wasn't that much beach.
Well, what a fantastic legacy.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. So that is August 7th?
Yeah. So we are doing some events. The Park and Rec District did a prom run. It was an overnight thing in May where they did 100K on the prom.
We were a sponsor of that.
Oh,
of course
great.
We were.
Yes.
I think it was a group of middle schoolers that actually won. They had the fastest time. Another big thing the Park and Rec District is doing, I hope this is going to turn out great, is the last, I don't remember the date, but the last weekend in July, we're going to have a chalk art contest.
Fun.
Nice.
And I'm hoping that this turns out to be as big as sandcastles in Cannon Beach.
It could be a whole new thing.
Yeah.
I think it should be. I just, what we'll do is we'll actually have a little class Friday night, where you can come, you buy your supplies from us, so everybody have exactly the same chalk. Mm. You get a lesson Friday night from some experts, and then Saturday you go out and you get your own little area on the prom sidewalk.
Oh, love it.
And it'll be marked off, and you do your art there. And then we'll have some judges, and we'll just start kind of from the prom turnaround and go north and south for as many entries as we have.
Summer is back. Excellent.
And they will not go away when the tide comes
in. That's right.
So,
well, that is exciting. And I'm glad that you are a part of that, wearing two hats, city councilor and with the museum. And I'm glad that the museum is reopened and everybody should check it out and support it any way they can. So,
August 7th will be the big day. That's the celebration. So you'll see more about that coming later.
Excellent. Thanks for coming. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.